Do you want to know what it takes to work as a high-performing executive assistant? You'll find out when you listen to the EA Campus podcast. Join me, Nikki Christmas, the founder of Practically Perfect PA and the EA Campus, for a weekly interview with successful assistants who all have first-hand experience and lessons to share on what it takes to excel in the role. Tune in, get inspired, and learn how to create an assistant career where you are valued, motivated, and ready to face every challenge head on. Whether you are an assistant just starting in your career or prepared to move to the next level, building a successful assistant career just got a little easier with the EA Campus podcast. Hi there, everybody, and welcome to the next episode of the EA Campus podcast. Today we are joined by Becky Kaapuni. Hi, Becky. Nice to meet you.
Hi, it's really nice to meet you as well.
Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. We've got a lot to cover, I know. So why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about your career to date?
Yeah, of course. I went to college and I was an English major. I graduated from San Francisco State University and I had no idea what I was going to do. All I knew is that I had to make money. I had to make it in the world. I had to be able to support myself. And I didn't have any passions or skills that I really felt that I was aware of. But I did realize that I knew how to assist people. I knew how to book appointments. So I figured that I should go more of the assistant route. And so I started off my career in publishing, and I was a release management. I did release management. And from there, then I decided to go into the wine business, where I started taking more assistant type roles. So marketing assistant, very much executive assistant adjacent. And then the company that I was at had moved far away. And I was like, I need to get out of here. I need to get back to San Francisco. This 45-minute commute is just not working for me. And I wound up applying for Goldman Sachs. And that's where I wound up going. And that was really where I started to look at being a career EA and just getting more of an idea of what the EA role encompasses and, you know, what I could do there and really honing my skills. The market crash happened in around 2008. And then there I was going, am I going to be fired from this job? What's happening? Teams were disappearing. I would go into work and there would just be people gone. At that time, a lot of different companies were poaching teams as well. With the market crash, they decided that this was their time to recalibrate and people were losing their jobs. From there, I decided, you know what, I'm going to try this tech thing. Tech had started coming into San Francisco. It was taking over. And I realized as things were trending that way, that maybe that's more what I wanted to do. So I got my first job in tech at this company called Home Run, and it was absolutely awful. It was horrible. I was working for a CEO who was just super egotistical. The world revolved around him. He had all these ideas that were just really out there. We would do whiteboarding sessions and he would just throw out these just totally random things. So it was really different than what I was expecting. He had me doing a lot of PA stuff, like taking his car to get it fixed, just anything that he needed. He also did take me to a strip club, which now would be a huge HR violation, right? But this was like tech back in the day and there were just no rules. So I decided I had to get out of here. This was not going to work out. So I figured the best thing to do was to go back to a place where I felt more safe, which was investment banking. So I decided to leave tech aside and I took a job with Bank of Montreal, BMO Capital Markets. And that is where I really started to dig in a lot deeper on my EA skills. I was working for a wonderful executive. Being there were some of the best years of my life. He taught me so much. He was so friendly. He was kind. He really made me feel like I was a part of the team. And I stayed there for 4 years. And I really thought, am I going to do? I am in my early 30s. I'm not making a ton of money. I think at that time I was making, gosh, maybe around $60,000. And I was like, is this going to be it for the rest of my life? I'm single. I'm in San Francisco. It's expensive. Prices are going up. And so I decided to take a leap and leave that job. And it was really tough because I was leaving definitely a comfort zone for me. So I decided maybe I should give this tech thing another try. It had taken over even more. It was everywhere. And everybody was in tech. It had taken me a long time to really wrap my mind around really going into tech because I loved old San Francisco and I loved it pre-tech. It was such a unique and beautiful place. And when tech came in, it took everything over. It gentrified so many parts of the city, and it just really changed the landscape. So I had been in San Francisco for so long, and I didn't want to sell out. But, you know, in order to take my career to the next level, I decided that's just what I need to do. So I started interviewing, and I wound up at a great little tech company called Node Prime. And I was there for a year when they were acquired. And then they kept me on for another year, the whole time with me knowing that I was going to need to find a new job. They were moving to Silicon Valley. My role had been absorbed. It was a very sane, healthy acquisition. My role was just being eliminated. So I did have a good amount of time to look and to really figure out what I wanted to do next. So from there, I went on to Mixpanel. This was a more established tech company compared to Node Prime. And I went in to support the head of sales. I was there for about a month and he was let go. And so then it's, oh my gosh, now what? Here I am at this company. Great. I just went back into tech. Like, what is happening? And so they wound up taking the CFO and having him take over a lot of the sales side. And he eventually became the CEO. I was there just shy of a year. And I came into work one day and he just called me into his office out of the blue. And he says, I'm sure this hasn't been working. And I was like, oh my God, are you going to fire me? And he's, yeah. And then that was it. That was this whole conversation. It came totally out of the blue. I had no idea things were not working. It was like, what is going on? And so they had asked me to stay on and to go into a more supporting role, supporting the EA to the CEO. She was going to transition to him. And they wanted me to stay on until they found somebody else. And that was the first time that I walked away from a job. I weighed my mental health. I weighed working for this company that just made me feel awful and was so abrupt and so unkind. And was I really going to spend the next several months here while I look for a job? When he fired me, it was such a shock to everybody. Not even HR knew. So this happened so out of the blue. So here I am, and I am jobless, and this was the first time that I had been let go from a job, and it was absolutely devastating. So I'm like, all right, tech is not going to work for me. This is not my environment. It has been so unkind to me, and I just started interviewing constantly. When I'm looking for a job, I am interviewing, or I am looking for a job day and night, interviewing as much as I can. This was through a holiday break and I took no downtime. If I do not have a job, I will even interview on Christmas. Okay. So I was just interviewing and I wound up getting hired by a fintech firm. But at the same time I was getting hired from them, I received a call from Twitter. And here I am. Do I go back into tech? Do I go with this fintech firm, which at least has the fin part of it? So it was financial services. This had been a big part of my background. It felt safe. I felt like I was going to succeed there. But I figured that if I didn't give Twitter a try, I would wind up regretting it. And I was right. So I was hired in to support the GM of Twitter, who basically at that time, the structure was, it was Jack Dorsey. And then under him was the general manager. And then under the general manager was all of what then would go on to be Jack Dorsey's directs. So there was just that one little layer. So I go in to support the GM, and within 2 months, he retires. And I am just like, oh my God, what is going on? I was supporting two other people at that time. And what happened is that one of my main execs, they changed the way that Twitter would work. And so now they were removing the GM role, and they were having all of Jack's staff roll up directly into Jack Dorsey. So I was supporting one of Jack's staff. He was the head of all engineering at Twitter. This job really changed my life. It really brought me into a whole different world than I had ever been exposed to. At that point, Twitter was still startup-y, but it had scaled so much that there was just more processes, and it was more like a real job and not just some startup that I'm just joining where anything could happen. And so I was at Twitter for almost 4 years. It was just an amazing company to work for and an incredible experience. It was unlike anything I had ever experienced. And it really introduced me to the different opportunities that we can have as EAs, both professionally and both financially. I thought that I knew what being an EA was about: scheduling, booking appointments, rearranging calendars, ordering gifts for people, putting on events. But when I went to Twitter, it just completely changed my experience. There was definitely this more idea of business executive partnership, really working with management, really working with a lot of other EAs. But just like anything, while I thought that I was going to be there for the rest of my life, things changed and it came to a point where it was time for me to move on. It was a very difficult decision, but I decided that it would be the best thing that I could do. So once again, I was interviewing over holidays. I was taking calls with anybody that I could. And I received a call from a CEO at a company called Medallion. And we went through many interview rounds. It was his first time hiring an EA. So he was very insecure about the whole process. He was trying to figure out what to do with an EA. And I don't know if many people know, but usually a lot of these young startups, at a certain time, the venture capital companies will tell them, okay, now is the time that you should hire a COO. Now is the time that you should hire an EA. And this was that time. And so he was bringing someone in to build the company up, to be there as it starts scaling and to start taking things off of his plate. I was there for about 3 months, and then he fired me. I think what ultimately happened is that he was not comfortable paying me what I had negotiated to. And so he was watching everything I did, a hawk, dissecting it, tearing it apart. It's like he had contacted me to put on a last-minute event in LA and for 20 people. And I was able to do it at this really nice upscale kind of pizzeria. And it wound up being $4,000. And he could not handle that. He told me that I spent too much money, that I was not being mindful. The list just goes on. And I'm like 20 people, less than 48 hours out. Like, I think that I did an amazing job. So there were just all of these little things that he would like nitpick on. And so he decided that he was going to end our relationship. And so there I was. I had left Twitter, this place that I loved, this place that I knew that I could make money for a startup. And once again, I'm sitting here without a job. So there I am interviewing again, going through holidays, just like giving it my all. And I wound up at this company called Loyal. When I received the job description for that job, I knew that this was going to be unbelievably chaotic, busy. I was going to have no life. They were hiring in for an EA to the CEO and an office manager. And I was right. It was 7 days a week, felt like almost 24 hours a day, doing so many things I had never even dreamed that I would do. Arranging trailers for a horse that my executive just bought. What am I doing? I have no idea how to do any of this stuff, but I figured it out. They also had the role rolling up into the chief of staff, which was very challenging for me because I didn't have a direct line to the CEO. Yet I was there at her beck and call and doing everything for her. They also did a lot of focus on office management, which really is not what is a part of my career, but I needed a job. In this job, it was to help develop the lifespan for dogs. I love dogs. So this seemed a great place to be. And while I was there, I was about 3 months in, I decided I'm not leaving this company. I need to just stay here. I need to figure it out. I'm committed. I need to stop having different jobs on my resume. I'm feeling like super low about my career at this point. I am thinking, is this just going to be the last job that I'm in? Is being an EA not what I want? Is this not working out? And just out of the blue, I received an email from somebody that I had met 8 years prior. During one of my interview processes, I met with her husband, who was a founder of a wearable tech company. And he had actually wanted to hire me at the time, but he couldn't afford me. And so he had me talk to his wife. And she was the founder of a company as well. And I had interviewed with her 8 years ago, but she couldn't afford me either. And so out of the blue, 8 years later, she contacts me via email and says, I'm losing my EA at Salesforce. I want you to come work for me. And just like that, here I was going to Salesforce. And that's how I got to where I am today. I went into this job to support her as the head of Service Cloud. And AI started really hitting the scene about 6 months into my career there. And so then she had worked on creating the AI org and was eventually appointed to be the CEO of AI. And so we moved over there. And so here I am at Salesforce. Everything's fine. Doing more of what I am used to, being pushed and excited about my job and really being given a seat at the table, which I didn't have at a lot of my past jobs, especially these smaller places, smaller startups. So it's been quite a journey to get here and definitely not a straight line. And so that's when I started really focusing on building up like my LinkedIn and sharing jobs and trying to connect with other EAs in the community so that people know that it doesn't go perfectly and it isn't a straight line and you still can make it. And there are so many executives and so many positions that you potentially could have that are just not going to be a fit. And that's okay. And I just want people to feel empowered by knowing that they are so capable, even when they feel like they aren't at times.
Yeah. That's an amazing run through of a career. I have written so many notes, Becky, honestly. I don't know. I've got my normal list of questions that I ask on the podcast, and I feel like I should just rip it up and throw it out the window because there are so many questions.
No way. I am here to answer them.
I do. I have so many things to come back to. But before I do that, I absolutely will come back to them because I know people watching and listening will think, please come back to some of that stuff and dig into it a little bit deeper. But before we do that, I do want to get a sense of really what life is like for you now that you're at Salesforce, because I think particularly the area that you're working in at Salesforce must be so exciting at the moment, so busy.
Yeah.
With just the huge amount of people, just the explosion in AI this year alone. So give us a sense of what your main, the main aspects of your role are at Salesforce, and what an average day, which I know is very hard for assistants right. to do, what an average day looks like for you.
Yeah, so it really depends. We're hybrid. So I go into the office. I'm also at home a lot. I tend to prefer being at home because I get so much more accomplished without the distractions. When I'm on site, I really am catering way more to my executive and white glove servicing based upon what she needs at any given time. So if I'm going into the office, I get up extra early to get ready and to go through anything that's come up via Slack or email. Maybe when I'm here at home, my start time kind of shifts because I stay in bed another hour and a half. Very from the moment that I get up in the day, I make sure that my Slack has been looked at, that my emails have been looked at, my text messages, making sure that nothing happened overnight or something hasn't changed first thing in the morning, as things always do. There's a lot of calendaring, scheduling, meeting execution, helping to revise ghostwritten copies that PR will send her or other people will send her to email out. Anything that she can get me involved in, she absolutely will. She 100% knows how to utilize her EA, probably too well. And so she will just throw so many random things at me because she knows that I'm capable. And it may not be things that I've been asked to do before by other executives, but she is so busy. She sits on boards. She is doing her normal job. She is now doing podcasts, which has been an exciting addition to what we do. And she's also a mother, and it just, the list goes on and on. So she has so much going on that I'm just pulled in every direction that I possibly can be. Her schedule changes all the time, including same day travel, the schedule just for the next day, the schedule changes from the time that I wake up. It's very random. If we're going into the office, a lot of times that will get canceled because priorities will shift. She's traveling a ton, so much, and I do not travel with her. A lot of that, from what I understand, was eliminated after COVID, and as tech has been trying to find its footing again with revenue and layoffs and just so many different things happening, they withdrew executive assistants flying around with their executive. It's just cutting costs is what it comes down to. So I don't really travel with her, which for me is great because otherwise I would be there taking her from place to place, giving her white glove service, not being able to work at all. And besides my job with her, there is this whole world at Salesforce that I'm helping to support also. As you can imagine, there are many EAs, many meetings, lots of different priorities, both with your executive and then both within the company and with your role at the company. So it's pretty much like in a nutshell. Of course, it course goes on and on. I'm part of a fairly newly created org. It really came to fruition towards the middle of this year. We're very much more startup-y than a lot of the other orgs at Salesforce.
It sounds so busy, but from everything you've said about your career, it sounds perfect for you. You've got an executive who finally understands what you can do for them. You're in a company that's structured, organized, established. So I just wonder how you go about just operating in that world. How do you keep up with the fast-paced nature of it? How do you make sure you're on top of everything? What kind of structure do you put in place so that you are able to manage everything thrown at you?
Yeah, I definitely need to lead more by example, but I don't because I am so
Says every EA around the world.
Yeah. So how I manage everything is that it is just so much a part of my life. Being an EA, being a part of this role, it really is just my life. And I have a lot of trouble making that time for my personal life, making that a priority. Something that I also went through on this journey was getting sober. And so when I did that several years ago, about 7 years ago, my priorities shifted and changed. And I started to focus on my career more and really digging in and being a part of that. And so my sense of self-worth and my sense of being has really tied to that. which is why when I've lost a job or something hasn't worked out, it has been absolutely devastating because I revolve so much of my life around my work. I put my executive above pretty much everything else except for my dog, who of course I love more than anything in the world. But I do, I revolve my life around that person, and everything that they do or feel or say affects my morale and how I am able to show up. I know that it is not ideal. If I'm giving advice, I would 100% be telling people that they need to prioritize themselves, their mental health, their time off, take your PTO, show up for yourself. You are all that you have. I do not do this in practice. I have not taken a single day of PTO yet. And I have been at Salesforce for about 14 months. This is not abnormal for me. It was the same at Twitter. It was the same. I also wonder if there's a little bit of PTSD from the positions that I've been in and this fear that my job is so replaceable. And so I face that a lot. And it's just like the last thing I want to do is let my executive down. The last thing I want to do is not be available. But also, she's going to call me anyway on PTO. She's going to text me anyway. And I did try one time to take a day and it was just useless. And so I try and mirror her schedule as best that I can. If she is going to be out, then I just go, okay, I don't need to respond to everything as soon as it happens. I can take a step back. I do a lot of work at night while I'm sitting in bed watching TV. That's when I get out the expenses. I do expenses almost daily. I stay on top of them and I'm just always working on them. It's not something that I want to like back up because then it becomes super overwhelming. So I'm just always engaged, always looking, always checking, always available. And that's how I get through it. But I do know a lot of EAs who are taking time off and are able to disconnect and do trust the process and the system more to rely on people to support them.
It's different strokes for different folks, though, isn't it? I remember once another amazing assistant said we were at a conference and we were listening to somebody speaking about well-being. And she said, I hate being told that I need to switch my laptop off at 5 o'clock.
It's
because
so
that stresses
true.
Me out. That's stressful for me. Having the TV on, but my laptop open at the side, just checking emails as they come through, maybe not dealing with them, but just seeing them. That is relaxing for me. That means that I can start my day the next day without being stressed.
Yes.
And I remember thinking it was really profound for me because this was really at the real height of well-being and life, you know, balancing work and life and all of that kind of stuff. And I just remember thinking she's being told every day that how she feels is wrong. And it's not. It's just what works for you and your balance. And I think the same for you.
Yeah. And that's a really good point to bring up because it's something that I think about all the time. There's a lot of shaming that goes on for people who do not have that balance, work-life balance. And I come from a generation who didn't grow up with this whole idea of mental wellness and mental well-being. I remember when I first got my job at Twitter, it's like the perks were insane, right? A lunch every day, like this cafeteria that has like 30 different options with chefs and people are not monitoring your time. You're not clocking in and clocking out. And this was a whole new world for me. It didn't used to be that way. In retrospect, we also used to have 9-to-5 jobs and we used to leave our computers at work. They did not go home with us and we didn't have work phones. And that was just a completely different life, especially during COVID and all of that, mental health and well-being became so much a part of the forefront of our culture, which is fantastic. But there are people like me and like the EA that you were talking about where our staying on top of it helps our mental health. It means that when I wake up in the morning, probably everything's going to be good, even though I'm checking to make sure. It means that when I do take the time to disconnect and watch the TV show or go to the dinner, and I do take my downtime, that I really know that there's nothing that is pending and needs to be done, because otherwise it will just drive me crazy.
Yeah. And it's also, this is good for you now. This is, you're enjoying this now. This might not be, your priorities might shift in 2 years, 3 years. And then it's, you change your perspective, you change how you work, you put different boundaries in place. But for now, if it's working and you're enjoying it, then there's absolutely no harming it. It's just checking in with yourself just to make sure that you're not burning out and that you can manage it. And when you can't, you reevaluate it.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important that you're sharing that today.
Yeah. And life changes so much, just like your career changes, life changes, what you feel you can do one day versus what you feel you want to do the next day. You have to be subjective around all of it. Who I was as an EA 10, 20 years ago is way different than the EA that I am today.
Yeah. I'd like to take you back to some of the things that you mentioned when you were talking about your career, because I know there's a huge amount of experiences you've been through, but also a huge amount of advice you could offer our listeners today. So I want to take you back to the beginning. I thought it was wild that you went from coming out of tech to go back into the safety of investment banking when so many people are like, get me out of investment banking. It's the Wild West. So I love that that was how bad your tech experience was, that you went back into investment banking.
Well, I mean,
that was your safety blanket.
Yeah, it's just, I came from this world where jobs were not just so replaceable. You heard stories that people that we grew up around, they were in the same job for 20 years. You know, I mean, this was like I pretty much felt that when I graduated, I would wind up somewhere and then I would be there forever. And this was all prior to realizing that in order to grow, I had to change jobs. In order to make more money, I had to change jobs. I had no idea that I was going to need to make these steps in order to become more successful. But yeah, I did know that investment banking probably wasn't going to just fire me out of the blue. And it was close enough to having been at school and college and high school that it gave me the structure that I needed at the time. So it definitely was a safety blanket, even though I know people are like clamoring to get out of it.
Yeah, I have to talk to you about that because I speak to a lot of assistants and it seems to be a really split kind of camp. People who love working at companies like Goldman Sachs, they love the pressure, they love the environment, they love the fast-paced nature of it, they love the kind of prestige of having that on their CV. And then there's others that really struggle with the pressure of working in those types of environments. So I wonder if you can just give some advice to people and just what to expect if you are maybe looking at a job at somewhere like Goldman Sachs or something of a similar ilk, if there's just some advice you can give and some perspective, what assistants might find working at those kind of companies.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it is that much different from the pressure that I experience now. In fact, the pressure that I experience now is tenfold compared to those environments. It's different. It's a different kind of culture. It's ridiculous. But one of the reasons I didn't want to be in that culture was because I wanted to wear jeans. I wanted to be able to just show up and not have what I'm wearing and how I'm put together be reflective of my work, which it is in those environments. They're very buttoned up. They are definitely not with more of the new world culture of women having a seat at the table. It is very much, or it was, I don't want to speak currently because I'm not there now, but it was very much a good old boys club. Women are treated differently. And it was just something that being a person in San Francisco was difficult for me to grapple with. I would say that it was a very safe environment for me because it was really established. Like, these are my hours. This is when I work. When I need time off, there would be an EA that would cover me. My execs were very much family people, so they understood having a work and a life balance. I would say when you get into venture capital, that changes a lot. When you start working with CEOs and founders, that changes a lot. But I think when you go to like big banks, you're able to have a little bit more flexibility with your time and how you show up versus going into a startup or big tech. Like, it never ends. It never ends. You basically have to be the person who creates the boundary, who turns off your computer, who stops looking at your phone, because you take it with you. It's with you everywhere you go. People are working whenever is convenient for them, which potentially could be all the time. My boss, she does the most work that she does that she needs me for is at night, because she will be in back-to-back meetings all day long. So during the day, I'm working on all of the things that come from the company, all the requests that people have to meet with her. There are certain meetings that she will take. She's so high up that everybody comes to her for every customer opportunity, but she's only able to take certain ones because otherwise she wouldn't be able to do her work. It's just really getting a grasp or an idea of what type of environment you want and where you'll be comfortable. Both have their advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. I think that's really, it's really interesting because I think you're absolutely right. We used to think of the kind of Goldman Sachs of the world, particularly at the time you worked for them. And when I was working in the City of London, it was exactly the same. They were the gold standard companies. And it's just not the case anymore. It is the Salesforces of the world. It is the Twitters of the world. Maybe not right this moment, Twitters of the world.
It's not Twitter anymore. But
maybe not. But Salesforce, absolutely.
It used to be.
Yeah. I'd love to talk to you about that. You were so close to working with Jack Dorsey. Can you just give us a little bit of an insight into how that worked? What was he like to be around and Twitter at that point in time?
Yeah, I think I met Jack a couple times. He was pretty much segregated from everybody else, although that's not the way that he would have liked to have been seen. It's just that the executives worked on a certain floor in a certain area. And because my executive was the head of engineering, he wanted to be more amongst the engineers. But Jack was a very interesting character. He really drove a lot of the values that Twitter stood for. This was the first time that I was a part of a company that actually had the values that Twitter had, which was trust and safety and putting the employee first and having mental health days, like realizing what a stressful and overwhelming environment it can be. When you work at a place like Twitter, you are affected by what is happening inside the company and what is happening outside in the world, because everything happening in the world is happening through Twitter as well. So I was there for Black Lives Matter, Me Too. And it's just the way that you experience it as a Twitter employee is just so different than I probably would have experienced these things and not having been a part of that culture. And so you're getting hit from all sides, and it really makes you take a look at your moral standing, where your viewpoints. I learned so much, and it taught me so much that has really developed my personality and who I am today. And it was an experience that I will never take for granted, that I feel so blessed to have had. And it taught me so much more about people and community and how to relate to others in society. It was really instrumental in who I am today.
Mm. I'd love to touch on what you've just mentioned there around Me Too, because you've certainly from, again, just your original answer, had a couple of Me Too moments with executives who were, as you said, egotistical, completely throwing HR regulation out of the window. Again, yeah. This is, as you said yourself, this is pre-Me Too. And it just, I think, to be honest, even though it's post-Me Too, it's so many women are experiencing this still. But I wonder, again, if any advice now, looking back and being a more established assistant, any advice for assistants who are working with egotistical bosses or working with bosses who aren't showing up as they should be in their roles?
Yeah, there was a time where I would have said, just get out, find something else. But the reason that I don't want to say that now is because so many people are out of a job. So many people are looking for work right now. You know, you go on LinkedIn, and I go on LinkedIn, and I work with a lot of EAs on there in my community, and it's all based on helping them find a job. I would love to be giving them other advice. I would love to be talking about mental health and talking about building your, what is the word I want to use, but building your self-esteem, building your confidence. But right now, everybody is looking for a job and needs to support themselves. So I would have said that you should absolutely leave. You should not compromise yourself under any circumstance. But now realizing that there are just things that people need to put up with while they look for something, I would say just be really secure about who you are and pull on all the resources that you can. If you can talk to HR, if you can talk to ER, if you can talk to your ombudsman, I know that it like depends upon where you're at. Some people are like, what's an ombudsman? What is ER? I get it. And I know that at a lot of these smaller companies that have founders and CEOs, there isn't really even an HR. You just have to really like take care of yourself, make sure that you document everything that happens, document it, because you never know when you're going to need that information in the future. If you can find a job for in the meantime while you find something that is a better fit, then take that job. I have always said that if a situation is bad, it's okay to leave and to go somewhere in the interim. As long as you can explain that, as long as your interview story is well developed and you know how to relay that information, you can manage it. You 100% can. You are more than what is reflected on your resume. So I would just say do everything you can to keep your health, your psychological safety, and just making sure that you take care of your needs the best that you can in the circumstances that you're in.
Yeah, that's such wonderful advice. I feel exactly the same. I remember saying in a virtual summit, leave, said the same thing. And then it really occurred to me that I was talking to so many different people from around the world. And my kind of privilege of being from the UK is that my salary, my job isn't tied to my benefits. So I still get universal healthcare. I still get, access to benefits. And it's just the States. That's not the same. And so many other countries around the world. So it really took a minute to go, actually, you can't just walk out of a job. Not when your healthcare is attached to your job. So I completely agree. Everything you said there is so valid.
And absolutely on the healthcare. So many times when I come up with random ideas of things, other things I could be doing and like little things I could start, it all comes down to what about my healthcare? It is so expensive. It is so expensive. And that really is, if you work for a company and they have great healthcare and they'll also cover your dependents, that's like gold. Mm-hmm. And so it can be really hard to move away from that. But then today, also, there are just so many people in need of jobs and not enough jobs, and it's so competitive, and people are having a lot of trouble, like even moving on to other opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you've found, being in San Francisco, it's such a hub of jobs and job creation there, but the city itself is so expensive. I know, again, it's very similar in London and many other cities around
New York.
But I'd love to move on to a few of the questions that I know that I've sent you and we've not had a chance to answer. I just wondered just if you could give us some advice again for new assistants who are just coming into the role, things that they should think about. I think there's, as we were saying, Salesforce in particular is now such a gold standard company that so many assistants would aspire to work for. So I just wonder if you could give some advice for new assistants maybe thinking to get where you are in your career.
Yeah, I would say be patient. Be aware that, unfortunately, you have to go through all the stepping stones and you have to start at the beginning. I give this analogy a lot with interviewing as well. Just take everything one step at a time. And when you're starting your career as an EA, it's the same thing. I would say go for the jobs that are looking for a year, 2 years of EA work under your belt. Don't be afraid to say you're working at a company and you've been doing EA work and you're like, I want to transfer into tech. Go ahead, apply for those jobs. Keep applying for everything. But just be aware that if you're not getting callbacks and you're not getting looked at, it's just because you need to build more experience. And unfortunately, that works from the ground up. I would say 100% know your worth and your value. I think that's one of the things that I wish I would have known going into this career. When I got my first job, I was making $30,000. And I thought that was amazing. Okay. Now, granted, this was many years ago. $30,000 did seem like more money back then, but I did not realize that I could make more money. So when I started, I was at like the very bottom. And so over time, I started to learning to negotiate for myself. I started learning that you negotiate regardless of whether you got a great offer or not. I started realizing that I had to spend the money to get my resume done, So you just spend the money to have somebody else put that together for me. That is their job. That is not my job. There are just these things that I think will help people. And that they like push aside. Like so many people now are looking for jobs and they contact me and they say, can you take a look at my resume? I can tell right off the bat that it hasn't been professionally done. And I'm just like, this is your first initial introduction to somebody. They are looking at your resume and they're trying to gather your entire story from a piece of paper. And resumes generally can look all the same. You can have 10 people and their resumes can seem almost identical. What is going to set you apart? Pay somebody to do that work for you. Give them the money. It is so worth it. It's the initial stepping block to going to the next one, which is the interview. And when you do an interview, don't think about how am I going to do this job. Don't imagine that you've already gotten this job. All you have to do is make it through the interview. Show up as your best self, be confident, know that you've got that interview, know that you can do that, worry about all the other stuff later. And it's just keep putting forth that effort, show up with curiosity, get excited about new things, always have a beginner's mind. I cannot tell you how many times I learned something new. Still to this day, there's still so many things I have yet to learn. Every job is going to be different. Every exec is going to be different. Every culture in a company is going to be different. This is why if you look through my experience, I've been to so many different places and some I've been successful at and some I have not. And so you just have to ebb and flow and learn and grow and build your boundaries and know what you're willing to put up with and what you're willing and what you're capable of.
Yeah. And you're such a perfect example of saying to somebody, this is what I'm worth. This is how much you have to pay to get me to work with you. And I will walk away if you can't afford it. Because yeah. That's what that's done is fast forward to where you are now. The executive that you work for has said, oh, I really wish I'd got that lady who came in and I couldn't afford her. She was great. Now here you are and now your work, she's called you up out of the blue just as you needed it.
Yeah.
And here you are. So it's such a perfect example of really knowing your worth and sticking to your guns.
And networking. First on knowing your worth, like you're going to negotiate your best if you're willing to walk away from a job. It becomes difficult when you really need the job. But let me just say the worst they can say is no. And then you just have to make the decision as if you want to get paid what they're offering.
But you can backtrack.
Yeah, you can backtrack. You say, I need more. And they say, we can't give you more. It doesn't mean that then you can't take the job. You absolutely can. But then on networking, it's just to get contacted 8 years later from somebody, I had no idea this was going to happen. And in fact, a lot of the struggles that I went through wouldn't have had to have happened because this was already lined up as it meant to be. She was going to call me regardless. She was going to get in contact with me regardless. So I'm really big on telling people to build their network, be in connection with people. I've started hosting dinners in San Francisco a couple times a month for EAs. And just really trying to build that community so that people can meet each other because people will remember you. They will remember you when a job comes up. They will remember how they felt with you at a dinner party and whether they would want to work with you. These are all just like little ways that you can showcase yourself, build your community, and get to know other people at the same time.
Yeah. Well, Becky, that's all the time we've got. I know that I've got a ton more questions. We might have to do a part two.
Because I would be happy to.
There are still so many questions I have for you. But for now, honestly, thank you for being so honest with us.
Of course.
Thank you so much for listening to the EA Campus podcast. We would love for you to take a minute to subscribe to the EA Campus podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. If you could give us a review, we would so appreciate that too. If you want to check out the show notes, you can do that by going over to the eacampus.com/podcast and take a look at everything we discussed. You can also find all the links to the resources, articles, and tech that we mentioned during the show. If you want to join the conversation inside the EA Campus community, you will also find all of the information on the EA Campus website. The community continues to grow and we have an amazing group of assistants sharing their careers. We have ongoing events and training for our members, and we would love to see ambitious and career-driven assistants join us. Thanks for your time, and I hope you tune in again to the next episode of the EA Campus podcast.